You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sidery. I'm joined by Kevin Bowen, the host of Kevin's Corner podcast, as well as the radio personality and written personality. If you follow the Colts, you know who Kevin Bowen is. Kevin Bowen, you follow him over on Twitter at KBowen1070. Kevin, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, Evan. Happy New Year, man.
Hey, you too. Really appreciate that. And starting off the new year, Kevin, we have the Colts in the playoffs for the first time since 2018, finished 11-5. Let me start off with this question for you. If you had to describe the Colts 2020-2021 season in one word, what would you say?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. I would say wild. I would also say you could probably use that word for just about any team in the NFL, just with how crazy of a year it's been. But entertaining, I don't know. I know the games maybe haven't been as crazy, at least the first few months of the season, but certainly here lately, pretty entertaining down the stretch. And you know, when you trade 13th overall pick and you sign a quarterback for $25 million and you make the draft splashes that you did, and you've got, now that we just saw it announced, six, you know, all pros as well. I mean, I think it's been a very entertaining, very, I guess when I say wild, I mean, there's been some up and down moments as well. You know, even Sunday week 17, at one point it looked like, you know, the Colts could be out of the playoffs. And then at another point it looked like they could be hosting a first round game against Baltimore. So certainly been just a crazy year all around. You had, you know, a couple COVID scares. Obviously the Tennessee game was a big bummer as well the second time around. But here we are in the playoffs, and this is the absolute best time to be a fan.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Kevin, six all pros, and leading that list is Quentin Nelson. He is joining Barry Sanders, for the only two players over the last 30 years to be first team all pros their first three seasons. Also Darius Leonard, DeForest Buckner's on that list, George Odom, a very well-deserved special teams recognition first team. And then the second team all-pro list included long snapper Luke Rhodes and center Ryan Kelly. Any surprises on that list, or pretty much status quo for you, Kevin?
I really don't think any surprises. I was very happy that George Odom and DeForest Buckner got that first team selection. I thought they both were snubs. We've talked about Buckner, obviously. Odom was a flat-out snub as well with what he's done special teams-wise, you know, making tackles. Leonard hasn't had the crazy, just Hall of Fame-like production he had his first two seasons. He's still been pretty darn good. And so I think that's why you see him on first team. You know, someone mentioned, you know, what about Brayden Smith? What about Kenny Moore? And there are a lot of good tackles in the league. Kenny Moore hasn't been maybe as good in coverage as some of those other guys as well. And I think we're getting a little greedy too, you know, if you start going down that list. You know, like I said earlier, the Colts, you know, tied for the most all pros in the league, and if you'd have told me that at the start of the day, I probably would have been a bit surprised by that. So I really don't think anybody too shocking there.
Let's talk about the two big additions this offseason for the Colts and how they've improved this team from a 7-9 team last year to an 11-5 team this year. Phillip Rivers and DeForest Buckner, what was your overall takeaways from seeing those two guys up close through the 16 game slate so far?
You said Buckner and who?
Buckner and Phillip Rivers.
Let's start with Buckner, I guess. The All-Pro. This franchise has never had a defensive tackle anywhere close to his level. And certainly Chris Ballard was very vocal, you know, around the combine last year about the three technique position and just the lack of interior production they got. You know, that was a position they really overturned and tried to churn a lot just during the regular season last year. So I feel like that's something to where you had to be serious with addressing that, and they certainly, you know, took that to another level. I think Buckner has come in here and has been extremely disruptive, and really just his raw numbers probably don't show his impact enough. I mean, they're very impressive in their own right, but if you dive even deeper into, you know, how this team has been on and off the field with him, that probably tells more of the story. As far as Rivers, he's been an upgrade. You know, I've talked about it a lot on the podcast, and did it last night as well when we were doing a Beers with Bowen. He's been an upgrade in efficiency. He's been an upgrade with chunk plays. I think he's mentally improved that position as well. And I think he's worth probably 2 to 3 wins from where you were at that position last year. And really, they've skyrocketed in a lot of passing stats from where they were last season. And honestly, he's protected the ball better. than what you had from the passing offense and the quarterback position last year, probably more so in fumbles. The interception rate is actually pretty similar, but the fumbles, he's done a much better job holding onto the ball. And, you know, some of that obviously comes from, you know, him just being a statue back there. I would say the one area where he has not improved this offense, and it's not totally on him, but a large majority of it is on him, is just red zone and third down. It's a unit that has not been good enough in that area, either of those areas. And that's going to be absolutely critical to any sort of success on Saturday.
Kevin, let me ask you this. I've asked you this one a couple times throughout the year. I feel like each time it's gone up a little bit. Personally, I think the same from my own point of view as far as if Philip Rivers will be the Colts quarterback next year in 2021. He'll be 40 years old next year as well, late in the season. I mean, is there any scenario you imagine where Rivers isn't back as the Colts QB next year?
I can't go all the way there. You know, Evan, I think if you're going to make me, you know, pick a 2021 week one starter right now, I'd probably say it's Rivers, but I don't say that maybe with as much confidence as I said it, you know, a few weeks ago or even a couple months ago. So, you know, you and I know I've talked about this before. You know, I just think the long-term answer at quarterback has got to come in a serious manner this offseason. I thought it was something that, you know, should have been explored a little bit more aggressively last year, but, you know, that's part of it. You know, maybe you wanted to stabilize that roster a little bit more, and clearly they have done that from a foundational standpoint. But, you know, there's a lot of decisions that have to be talked about. Rivers, and then you get into the list of names, you know, Stafford and Wentz and Darnold and Prescott and, you know, whoever else you deem, you know, that should be on that list and should be looked into. And it's obviously what the Colts did last year before they made the move for Rivers, and it's certainly something that they need to do again this season. I think Philip Rivers has been, you know, pretty good. And I don't want this to sound like it's just some extreme knock on him, but I do think there's a ceiling that, you know, he's reached as a quarterback in this league. And when you're not, you know, getting or whatever the next 10 years, considering his age, I think that's when you have to look at other options.
I think it's a very valid point, too. I would imagine, too, like getting six All-Pros now this year, this team could handle maybe a huge trade up in the draft to go into the top 10 or something like that, get a Trey Lance or a Zach Wilson, one of those guys. Then there could be something to watch for here as we get into the offseason, though, Kevin. But let me ask you about the overall coaching staff this year. Frank Reich, Matt Eberflus, Nick Sirianni. I know a lot of fans have been confused as to why the second half issues have happened throughout the year at the offense. I know Eberflus has been a little inconsistent, too, at the defense. Some strong starts, some games, and really some inconsistent ones outside of that. What's your overall opinion on both sides of the football as far as coaching goes in 2020?
Yeah, you know, I guess let's start with Reich and the offense. You know, I think overall, you know, you got to be pleased with the passing offense taking a jump. You know, at times, has things been a bit, you know, too greedy in the Jacoby Brissett package? Yes. Like I said, third down and red zone, I think a lot of that falls on scheme as well. Certainly players make plays down there, but, you know, when you lack in that personnel, it's where your scheme's got to win. And so I don't think they've been as good as they would like to in those areas. And then a little bit of the running back rotation, which probably falls on more of the coaching staff in general. And again, that's me kind of nitpicking a little bit, but I still am certainly giving them, you know, a nice letter grade because the run game has rebounded here in the second half of the season. You know, offensively, you have, I think you ranked top 10 in points scored. I know some of that comes from obviously defense, special teams, touchdowns. I think even if you just went purely off the offensive drives, you would rank that high. And you're doing that, I don't think, with, you know, elite personnel at running receiver, I shouldn't say running back, at a receiver, tight end, and quarterback, which I think are obviously pretty key areas when you talk about success of an offense. Defensively, I do like just the adaptation we've seen really since that week one effort. It's a shame that it took Matt to kind of have that wake-up call, but I do think we've seen a little bit more of a diverse defensive approach week in and week out. It's interesting. Again, it's something I talked about last night. When you look at the raw numbers, Evan, of just turnovers and sacks, it's really not that different from last season, but the timeliness of those plays has taken a huge jump. And I mean, we can rattle them off, you know, Blackman against Green Bay, Blackman against Cincinnati, you know, Kenny Moore in the end zone against the Raiders, you know, Leonard Stripp against Houston, Leonard Stripp of Matthew Stafford, you know, timely plays from Buckner and Houston at times as well. So I think that's where you are really pleased. I think Eberflus deserves a lot of credit for this run defense continuing to be, you know, near the top of the NFL. and then just a little bit more adapting, again, diverse in the back end. It hasn't been perfect by any means. They've struggled here of late. There's been a regression, certainly, but still, it's kind of where I thought this defense would be in 2020. Above average, not elite, but above average, and I think that's where they slot.
Last general question I have for you, Kevin, before we dive into the preview of the Bills game tomorrow. We're less than 24 hours away from kickoff now. Let me ask you about Jonathan Taylor and his hot start, or really his hot finish for the last couple months of the season. Almost 740 yards rushing in the last six games, seven touchdowns, including that reception against Vegas. So you can really count eight touchdowns for him there, over 6.2 yards per carry as well. Derrick Henry-esque numbers from Jonathan Taylor, who's really turned it on over the last few months. What I mean, from where we were in September, October to about Jonathan Taylor, Kevin, I mean, just a polar opposite turnaround and really unexpected.
Yeah, you know, it's to me, Evan, this is a bit a credit goes again to Chris Bowden and the staff for how big of a prerequisite they put on character. You know, these guys handling adversity. I've mentioned this story before. You know, it kind of comes down to Nyheim Hines, that rookie season. Remember in the preseason, he struggled fielding punts. I mean, there are some questions from people that I thought were outrageous of, you know, is he going to get cut? You know, things like that. And Hines, again, mentally overcame that, had a tremendous rookie season, and now look at him. I think he received a vote today, if I'm not mistaken, for the All-Pro team. So that's kind of what Jonathan Taylor went through. To that degree, no, but he struggled. He got benched, you know, not outright benched, but certainly moved down the depth chart. Jordan Wilkins, you know, at times was ahead of him, but he stuck with it and he, you know, hit a roadblock and some hurdles as well, but certainly overcame those. And so, a big, big credit to him. Again, it's something to where, you have to look at the scouting department. They knew he had the physical characteristics, but also I think just him mentally was why they felt like he was worthy of that 41st overall pick. He was going to work. And when, you know, things didn't go his way, he was going to work even harder. And I think he did that. And like you said, he's running like an absolute stud right now. He's the hottest running back in the league, not named Derrick Henry. And he's going to be a huge part of any success you're going to have tomorrow and certainly the rest of the month.
Yeah, looking really even past the playoff run and heading into maybe the next couple of years, Jonathan Taylor's pace over that six-week stretch, Kevin, was around 1,900 yards if he had it over a full 16-game slate. I mean, looking ahead, is he the engine of this offense for the next couple of years, Kevin, in your opinion?
That's a good question. Boy, you got to think so. Now, again, a lot will depend on, you know, obviously what you do at quarterback. That speaks for itself. And I think a lot will depend on, too, just the development of Paris Campbell, you know, as long as he can stay healthy, and Michael Pittman. And then what else you do at receiver? You know, is it bring back T.Y.? Is it they'll go out and make more of a splash move in free agency? But you know full well that when you draft a rookie running back that high, you expect that rookie contract really to be kind of like more of a second contract for a lot of players. Like those are kind of your prime years when you are playing that position. So, yeah, I mean, I expect him to be, again, perennial 1,000-yard runner, probably much more on Pro Bowl, All-Pro type teams because, you know, we know this O-line is largely going to stay intact as well.
Totally agree with you there with Jonathan Taylor. And moving forward here, I'm so excited to see how he develops in the next couple of years with the Indianapolis Colts. But let's hit on the Buffalo Bills. They play, of course, the Colts against the Bills tomorrow in Orchard Park. 1:05 Eastern time kickoff tomorrow to kick off the playoffs. Kevin, when you've watched this Bills team from afar, I mean, what stands out to you most about them? Josh Allen's had a huge year. Stephon Diggs had a monster year as well, a receiver. Compared to the other matchups too, Kevin, I mean, Tennessee I would have liked better. Pittsburgh would like better. I feel like this is the worst case scenario match for the Colts. They still have a chance, of course, if they do a couple things right. But this Bills team seems pretty scary, especially offensively on paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the worst matchup of any of these teams playing on wild card weekend. I know some people would counter with Baltimore, but I just think that the explosive nature of Buffalo's offense really worries you. And I think they're just pretty sound on defense as well. I don't think they're going to make a lot of mental mistakes. I think he almost got to out-bully him a little bit up front, but I think they kind of take on the persona of their head coach, Sean McDermott, who obviously has the heavy defensive background. So, yeah, it's not ideal, but you know what? Part of this is life. Just when you sneak into the playoffs, and you know, you certainly snuck in, and you didn't have those tiebreakers in your favor. So this is why you are, you know, sitting there playing the two seed. But you know, at the same time, I do believe that there is a blueprint, you know, with a heavy dose of Jonathan Taylor, certainly to find some great success and to play keep away and sustain drives and, you know, do things that can help not only your offense and certainly put up points, but, you know, also just make sure that you're in a position to where you're playing keep away and then you're finishing off those drives as well. So not a great matchup when you look at the rush and cover weakness that this team has shown over the last month and a half. I think Buffalo's got a really deep wideout core, kind of similar to Pittsburgh, which worries me a little bit when you start to get in the depth at that cornerback position as well. So yeah, it's not ideal, but you know what? You're in the dance. They're probably feeling a little bit more pressure than you are. And certainly I think crazy things normally happen in the playoffs, can happen in the playoffs. And I think in 2020, there's even a better chance of that happening.
Kevin, I know Frank Reich mentioned earlier this week that this team is very loose. They really, all the pressure, like you mentioned, is pretty much on Buffalo, excuse me, at this point, because the Colts are a 7 seed. They don't have any really outside noise saying, oh, the Colts are going to go into Buffalo and beat them. There's not a lot of teams picking or a lot of people predicting the Colts to go into Buffalo and win. Do you get the sense, talking to Frank Reich this week and also the players throughout the week, that you get that sense that they are pretty relaxed and they're pretty much really not overhyped about this matchup on Saturday?
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I thought it was the loosest I've seen Frank Reich all week long. You know, certainly Darius Leonard, probably the most vocal Colt player-wise, and I would say that he was, you know, his typical self as well. You know, I am curious just how Phillip Rivers will play and what is on his mind. I just think human nature, how do you not think about this could be your last opportunity? I just think that's an inevitable situation that's you really don't know until that ball's kicked off or, you know, until you're in the midst of the heat of competition and, you know, you're sitting on the sideline or you're coming out of halftime, things like that. So, you know, pretty loose bunch as they should be. I think this team in years past, two things have stood out to me. I think they play better as the underdog. And also, I think they play to their competition. And that's good and bad, obviously. But I think in general, they play to their competition. It's not like they've gotten their, you know what, blown off, you know, really at all this season outside of that Tennessee game when you had a lot of guys missing. So I think that's in your favor as well.
Looking at this matchup, and I know you mentioned Jonathan Taylor, I'm right there in agreement with you. I think he should be getting around 20 to 25 carries tomorrow. Cold weather game, I think the highs could be right in the mid-30s. Phillip Rivers' arm, I imagine, we saw it against Cleveland and Chicago, not the best in cold, inclement weather. I mean, if you're Frank Reich, if you're Nick Sirianni, do you just go and do the offensive meeting rooms and just play that Kansas City game over and over again as far as the game plan goes? Like, have this mentality up front from the offensive line. Have John Taylor be the new version of Marlon Mack in that game with 27 carries. I mean, I feel like that's the blueprint right there, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of the blueprint, but I also think offensively it is a little bit different in what Kansas City had been. You know, Tyreek Hill did not play in that game. Mahomes a little bit banged up. And then what Buffalo, you know, poses, you know, Allen and Mahomes have some similarities, but, you know, also they're much different in stature. Again, Stephon Diggs, a much different challenge than what Kansas City had in that game. If I'm not mistaken, I think Sammy Watkins was banged up as well. But certainly from the run the ball, sustain drives, limit possessions, try to get a bit of a low-scoring game, yeah, I mean, all that checks the box. And again, that was kind of the blueprint you felt like, you know, you had in that playoff matchup against Kansas City as well. You just didn't execute it. But that's why I think a lot of fans felt like this was going to be a competitive game, you know, back in that, 2018 season, you know, when they went to Arrowhead. So a lot of it is similar, but I do want to credit Buffalo. I think they're a little bit more sound defensively than Kansas City was last year, a little bit more balanced at every level. Offensively, they might not be as just dynamic, but they've got some explosive ability as well. And again, they do it a little bit differently. Yes, they've got the elite quarterback and the wideout group that is, you know, pretty deep in some different skill sets. But I still think it's just a little bit of a different look than maybe what Kansas City brings.
I know Jonathan Taylor, could mention, I think is going to be the main key to this game for the Colts offense. But looking at this offensive unit overall, Kevin, in a playoff game especially, as an underdog, a 2-7 matchup, you're going to need multiple guys to step up here. Who is another player or two you should watch out for on the Colts side of the offense outside of Jonathan Taylor to really help them get this upset?
Offensively?
Yeah.
I would say two guys, Nyheim Hines and Michael Pittman. You know, with Hines, if you look at who Buffalo has struggled against running back wise this season, it's kind of been a little bit more of guys out of the backfield. You know, think of Austin Eckler, think of Miles Gaskin, think of a little bit of James White as well. I mean, those are kind of the quicker backs that can make some plays. Again, more of that as that receiving threat. I think Hines is huge there. And then I think Michael Pittman, it's time for him to get back to the guy we saw in November. You know, he's kind of had a quiet close to the season. If they do limit T.Y. Hilton in any way, you really need Pittman to make plays. And the beauty of it is I do think Pittman has shown that he can make plays really in a multitude of ways, you know, even on jet sweeps or handoffs or crossers, or there are a few outside routes as an X wideout. I thought he made on Sunday against the Jags as well. I'd like to see some 50-50 chances potentially inside the red zone for him. So I think both of those guys could be critical.
Defensively, Kevin, flipping over to the other side of the football here, I feel like the front four is going to get home against Josh Allen. I imagine you're going to be playing a lot of heavy zone. I know, like you mentioned, for Kansas City in that matchup when they won last year, Tyreek Hill was out, Sammy Watkins was out. So I think you're going to have to play a lot of zone coverage. I think probably rely a lot on Xavier Rhodes as well against his former teammate, Stephon Diggs. I mean, I feel like it all comes down here to the trenches, Kevin. I feel like the offensive line's got to win their side of the football, and the defensive line, DeForest Buckner, Justin Houston, Kamoko Ture has to have a good game, in my opinion, as well. I feel from the defensive point of view, I think the front four's got to get home consistently against a guy like Josh Allen.
Definitely. You know, we know full well that the Colts love to rush four, drop seven. That's kind of their thing. And so, you know, your ability in Ture flashed a little bit last week. You know, if you can create some of that, get Allen off his spot, that's half the battle with him. Because, you know, if you let him out of the confines of that pocket, you know, he's a guy that can scramble to scramble, but he can also scramble to use that howitzer of an arm and make some plays vertically. So you've got to be disciplined. Yes, your rush integrity up front is critical. But then also when you're in those zone looks, you've got to make sure that you know, keep that zone integrity at the back end, because if that starts to get a little leakage when Allen starts to scramble, you know, Buffalo wideouts and tight ends are going to find some gaps. And so just in general, the whole rush and cover dilemma, it's a big challenge, but that has to be there.
Last one I had for you, Kevin, just looking at this game tomorrow, about 23 hours away from kickoff in Buffalo. What's your prediction? What's your expectation for what's going to happen tomorrow, Kevin? I know the Colts are heavy underdogs, 6.5-point underdogs on DraftKings, the last I checked. I'm going 31-24 Bills. I just think this offense from the Buffaloes has too much firepower. I think the Colts will keep it close with a solid running game, maybe make a couple plays on the offensive side as well. But unless they make a turnover or two, Kevin, I just don't think they're going to go into Buffalo and win. So I'm going 31-24. What's your prediction and what's your overall thoughts? What's going to happen tomorrow?
Yeah, that's actually the exact score that I have as well. I think the Colts can move it. What worries me is just, again, do you finish off drives enough? And then I just don't know if you can get enough stops against Buffalo. If too much falls on the plate of Phillip Rivers, that concerns me as well. You cannot get in obvious passing situations. Like we talked about earlier, you got to get off to a quick start. I think that's paramount as well, to kind of stay ahead of schedule, not only on the scoreboard, but also just within the course of, you know, first, second, third down, things like that. So I think it's going to be competitive. I don't look at this as 31-24, like a backdoor way to get 24. I think it's going to be a very close game. I just see Buffalo making kind of one or two more plays more. But certainly, like you said, defensive turnover, special teams-wise, can you sneak a possession to end the first half? You know, that's something that I think you have to keep an eye on as well. But, yeah, I got Buffalo 31.